Hello and welcome to the Star Trek Review Podcast, Trek This Out. I am your host, Bob, and joining me upon the bridge are Suki, Lindsay, John and Andrea. On this voyage, we are reviewing the Next Generation adventure, The Defectors. We'll be putting some lights out of five on the episode, voting for this week's red shirt and finding out what you guys think. But before we crack on, we have some news. This is my last podcast as I am moving on.
We managed to get rid of him.
Everyone's having a party, smiling to him, which for my liking. But the guys are going to carry on, which is the great news, with the podcast. Without me, I'll probably pop up as a guest at some point. But it is over to the guys, and I can't wait to listen to it without me on. So good luck, and thank you very much, everyone, for your kind support over these last over a year now we've been running this podcast for. But I've just got some bits on now, things are opening up again with gigs and bits and pieces and being a dad and all that, that I'm having to sort of try and prioritise other things. But I've loved doing it, and I've loved working with you guys. Working because we get paid for this, don't we? A very high wage. But no, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. Right, it's time to go around the table and find out what you guys think to this episode. I'll get a vibe at least anyway. Suki, I'm going to come to you first for your vibe, please.
Yes, I did enjoy this episode. I can't remember watching it on first from when it was first shown. Right, so it was all brand new as I watched it, and I do like the twist ending towards the end. So yeah, it was an enjoyable episode. Really did like the guest actor, fantastic.
Good. Was it Jim Robinson off Neighbours?
No.
Alan Dale? No, it wasn't Alan Dale.
Why do I think every Romulan looks like Jim Robinson off Neighbours?
I love the fact that Suki knows exactly who that is.
I love Alan Dale, Jim Robinson.
I know who it was as well.
He's amazing. Like he's gone on and done bigger things. Well, if you can believe it or not, bigger things than Jim Robinson off Neighbours. But I just think every Romulan is Jim Robinson off Neighbours, but obviously not.
I think Jim Robinson's got slightly angry eyebrows, and that's potentially why.
Is it? There must be a reason.
I was like, slightly angry eyebrows.
I mean, there was two Romulans in this, and I just tried to think, it's one of them Jim Robinson off Neighbours, but obviously not.
No.
I had to Google who Jim Robinson is. And then I watched Neighbours. I think he might have been before my era.
Yeah, because I'm old. And so, well, Suki's really old. So,
what's up?
Anyway, Lindsay, while you're there, give me your vibe for the Defector.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. For me, it felt like a kind of peak TNG, like, you know, slightly thought-provoking, a bit pompous. Like, some of the Shakespeare stuff, I'm like, oh, guys, you're trying quite hard, aren't you? But yeah, no, I thought it was well done. I think it was quite well paced. I think I really liked the fact that we got to see some of it from the Defector's POV at various points. So that was interesting. So yeah.
Nice. Pob, as in that thing on telly with ears. Pob. Remember Pob?
Everything's reminding you of old TV, Bob. What's going on?
Well, no, I've reverted back to the 80s. I have now bought a skateboard, and I play Dungeons & Dragons. I wear shirts with the sleeves ripped off, and I do karate, so I am living the 80s dream. I'm regressing. I've gone through the 90s during the football, and now I've gone back to the 80s. John,
and we are going to be watching He-Man as well.
Yeah, give us a vibe. Yeah, we've got He-Man. We bought it off something, didn't we, Suki?
It's on Netflix.
Of course it's on Netflix. John, give us your vibe. Fairly positive-ish so far.
It is certainly an episode of Star Trek. I think there's a Romulan in it. It's been like 3-4 weeks since I watched it. And I remember when I watched it, it didn't blow me away, but I do like the idea of there being the whole Defector thing and having a Romulan on the ship to try and explore some of the cultural differences between the peoples and the Federation. And yeah, it was all right. It was, as Lynn says, I think it is pretty much at the time of TNG when they really hit their stride, so it's pretty smooth.
That's I'm going to put that tepid going cold. Andrea, give me your vibe.
It's all right. I quite like Romulans. I quite like to see the Romulans getting an outing. Like that kind of cloak and dagger kind of aspect. It's one of those episodes where I don't think I particularly remembered it, but sometimes you remember episodes for the wrong reasons. I think it's just a solid episode. It's a solid season 3 episode. I don't think that there's anything terrible about it. I've got some complaints, but when do we ever not have complaints? So it's like, it's like a middling episode from a relatively decent season of TNG. So it's all right.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Andrea. By the way, I've just Googled Alan Dale, Star Trek. He was the Romulan in Nemesis. He was one of the Romulans in Nemesis, or a Vulcan, or what? Oh, no, he's a Romulan. Nemesis. There you go. I thought I wasn't going mad. So it wasn't, but it wasn't Jim Robinson anyway. It was all right, wasn't it? Anyway, let's get in deep. I'm going to put this ship into warp. And we are at warp. You're listening to the Star Trek Review Podcast. Trek this out. We are reviewing the next generation adventure, The Defector. It's been a fairly tepid response, to say the least. So, look, you were the most positive, I think, out of all of us. It's a tussle between you and Lindsay on the positivity front. Why are you so positive about this episode? It's because it was not as bad as the last one we did.
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah. At least in this one, the characters, the main actors were proper characters instead of whatever the writer decided that were needed for the plot.
You missed the bit where you said the male characters were proper characters.
Oh, here we go. Straight off the bat.
The women say like literally three lines between them.
They did.
The ladies were in it, were they? Crusher and Troy. They were briefly in it, weren't
Crusher
they?
Says something horrifically poor, and Troy attempts some interrogation.
What do you mean by horrifically poor? What was that?
Picard asks her if she thinks his wounds could be self-inflicted, and she's like, they were so serious, despite the fact that they'd sat and had a conversation with him for like half an hour before he was sent to medical to get them treated. What nonsense was that?
Well,
nonsense.
Riker's got his beard now, Worf's growing hair, so they're getting there. But yeah, you know, you definitely try the characters a lot more rounded. I love it with TNG. What I do love is the intros like this one, a holodeck. Get Patrick Stewart's a Shakespearean actor. Let's put a wig on him and a mask and stuff and make him act.
What was that about?
I don't know, Andrea.
Talk about the opening, because it made my heart sink, right? I've written his Data's Fringe, fucking hell, right? He's attending Patrick Stewart's acting school with a bell-end haircut. Like, dear, nobody wants to see your one-man Shakespeare shite. Like, I just cringe at scenes like that. And then this, like, Henry V thread that they've tried to pull through the story, but in no way does the plot of Henry V have anything to do with this storyline. It's like, it's so tenuous. It's just like, Sir Patrick, you know, you just do a few Shakespeare lines, it'll be great because you're a Shakespearean actor and we need to like find excuses to just wedge it in whether it matters or not.
He gets to play a brummy though, doesn't he?
He does play a very good brummy.
That's what my comment was the fact that when I went onto Wikipedia, because I watched that little opening scene, went onto Wikipedia, did a bit of research, and it says Patrick Stewart put on a Black Country accent and he was a bit gornal. And I was thinking, well, that was not Black Country. That was not Gornal. Right? And I just thought, it's just wrong. Whatever the accent he was using was not Black Country.
I thought it was
kind of supposed to be his native Yorkshire, but it wasn't Yorkshire.
Andrea.
Well, we meant to know that was Patrick Stewart doing that bit, because it was really friggin' obvious.
Of course,
and
it was. It was very
then they do like the double reveal where they turn around and he's there as Captain Picard. I was like, it makes no sense. It made literally no sense. However, for anybody who isn't following us avidly on Twitter, I had this huge revelation where I realised that Kenneth Branagh has a name check in Star Trek. We got Olivia. Yeah, because Picard. I think it's Picard. No, it's not. It's Data. Data says, I'm going to watch the performances of Olivier and Branagh. And then he lists two people that don't exist, one of whom sounds Klingon. But yeah, I was like, oh, bless. Oh, made me smile.
Elon Musk got a mention in Discovery. I don't think it's all it's cracked up to be getting mentions in Star Trek.
So, yeah, but this is ages ago. It's just one that I hadn't clocked before, because like there are ones that we know, like that we hear about all the time, like, you know, whether it's Stephen Hawking or whatever the guy is from Crown Princes from Saudi. Anyway, like, you know, there are people who we know have had name checks or who appear in Star Trek, but yeah, that was one I hadn't spotted before now.
So in honour of how enthusiastic Lindsay was with that Kenneth Branagh reveal to her, I've called myself on this Zoom call Kenneth Branagh's understudy.
Oh, you are.
Because I thought...
You're an absolute spit, Suki. I couldn't tell the two of you apart. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for explaining visual
people, this comedy. Is not for him.
I am putting it in. It's going in. Because I do limited editing, Suki, as we know. John, you've been quiet, so I'm going to come to you.
Yeah. Right, my notes aren't as revealing to me as I'd hoped they would be. As in, the stuff I'm saying isn't helping me. I do say Picard playing a Brummy, and then more Shakespeare shit really overdoing it now. And Worf gets angry. That's one of my first few points, and I don't really know where we're going with that.
At least Worf is angry, properly angry, not just weird angry like he was last time.
Well, I've written the spy fella acting all spy-like with an orange disc in his...
Yeah, he had it in his boot, didn't he?
In his boot.
Yes, he did, John.
I don't even know what that is. I have no memory of that film.
This, John.
I have to say, there is an overarching challenge with this episode, because I do think it is quite an interesting kind of study of, like, the United Federation planets' relationship with Romulus, and of the Romulan hierarchy and stuff. Like, I do think it's quite interesting, but for a society that's like super secretive and like really shady, you'd think it might have dawned on somebody that they were being played by their own government.
Oh, right, I see what you mean. Because it is
like, how could you be so surprised that they'd let them? Like, it's not a particularly novel technique, as far as I'm aware.
Well, it is a very good twist.
And they didn't go for a shit at least once.
Yeah, there was no toiletry behaviour. No water was drank. However, Romulan
that's not true. Water was drunk.
Was it? I wasn't on water watch, Andrea. Yeah.
On that note, I find it hard to believe that replicators only function in degrees Celsius. It seems quite limited, considering it makes food out of poo. Like, and it can't handle other temperature scales. Like, considering like it's like intergalactic crew.
Intergalactic crew poo.
But that implies that it also only understands Federation standard language, which is an interesting.
Are we talking about replicas? Amazing. I love the fact.
Well, not really the computer in general. Like, the computer is massive and it's doing lots of stuff. Like, if it doesn't understand multiple temperatures, then how? Yeah, weird.
Yeah, very weird. It crossed my mind.
I think what they were getting at was that the Romulans are so unknown and mysterious that they don't actually know how they measure things in temperature. I do think there was a reason for that. But, like, it did, like, I think it could have been slightly better rather than just, oh, I only work in degrees Celsius, I'm afraid. Like, I was kind of, like, quite a heavy point to say, oh, we know nothing about the Romulans. But I think that's where they were going with that.
Well, and it's like at the end when, spoiler alert, he kills himself. I think...
I mean, I honestly haven't watched this recently. I really should have done.
John's like, what?
Yeah.
So when it turns out he has in fact been played by his government because he'd already expressed his displeasure, he'd already been effectively like booted out to like a post in the middle of nowhere, and he was still surprised that they weren't feeding him real intel. But what he does eventually kill himself, and like that whole thing when they come in and he's lying on a bed like laid out, and Crusher gets one of her other lines, which is along the lines of, oh yeah, he took this thing and we didn't know what to do about it. Like, again, it's just like, rather than saying like you could have done, oh, he took a poison we're unfamiliar with, and by the time we'd figured it out, like, we couldn't save him. Like, it just, like, they didn't handle that unknown very well. I think Andrea's totally right. Like, yeah. It could have just been like, I'm afraid I'm not familiar with that measurement.
Andrea?
I was just going to say, I think in a lot of ways, it feels like a story slightly beyond its sort of time. Because I think if you look at, when we looked at Balance of Turret, it felt like a Cold War story. And I almost think this feels like a Cold War story when you think about the idea of like defection and like crossing borders and stuff. That was like really like on point in the 70s and 80s, but that kind of it has been sort of culturally relative. Like, that time had kind of passed by the time this came out, so it almost felt like it was kind of harking back to those type of stories. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, everybody did a, like, Russian defector story in some way, shape or form. Even, like, I'm pretty sure there's one even in Murder, She Wrote. So I think it is in that kind of tradition of, like, that sort of defector crossing the lines of information, spies, that type of thing. And it should have been more tense, considering they had, like, 48 hours to prevent or start a war, I think they said. So I think, in a sense, it kind of felt like the time where that would have been, like, really sharp and relevant had kind of gone. And it's, like, one of those tropes that's been done, like, a lot.
That's a very good point, by the way, Andrew. But I do like the Romulans. I think they're horrible. Like, as in, I think they're a good, they're quite an interesting baddie. There's a bit more sort of cloak and dagger, Cold War espionage kind of thing going on to them than, like, say, the Klingons. I think maybe Kim Kardashians and the Romulans are sort of on a par for their sort of, I don't know,
they're scheming,
quite an intriguing triple, double, quadruple crossing race. And I do like that. And I did find it quite interesting. And it was well played by the not Jim Robinson actor,
James Sloan.
Yep, thanks. Okay.
I think it was interesting because I think sometimes the best Star Trek episodes struggle from the fact that they've only got 45 minutes and they're actually trying to do something that is vaguely in-depth or trying to cover multiple points of the same story. So where the Henry V stuff came in, and it's Henry V, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay,
so I'm Scottish, we got different history. And we only studied very specific bits of Shakespeare. We didn't do things like the Henrys.
What?
I didn't do any of the Tudors or the War of the Roses or any of that nonsense.
Neither did I, but I've managed to gain a sort of contemporary knowledge of the situation from reading and shit.
Right. You've had longer to fill in that gap than I have.
Wow.
Lindsay won that one.
Can we bring it back to the fucking replicator?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I was going to say is that the thread that they're clearly trying to pull out of that is about the king on the eve of the war, and they kind of make allusions to, like, the stuff with Data and Picard in this episode is it's not my favourite. Because I feel like by season three, this idea that Data is entirely detached from proceedings makes no sense to me. Like, Picard's like, oh, I need you to record everything from now on so that there's a completely detached record of what's happened. He can't be detached because he's a member of Starfleet. Like, I understand that his interaction with the world is different and how he perceives things is different, but he has an allegiance.
I think you're just using him as a data recorder at that point, not, no pun intended, but because he can empirically record everything as is.
But you would like to think he's that the internal sensor...
He's not going to layer his opinion on top of that because he's been told not to, I suppose. If he's... Yeah. I'm still frustrated with Data's inability to know basic fucking idioms with all his knowledge of, like, in all the knowledge he has.
That wasn't one of the finer moments either. But yeah, so they were trying to pull that thread through, and there was a scene where Picard talks about, oh, it's not as easy for me to walk around the ship unknown, and I'm like, I'm sure Beverly could sort that out for you. There were too many other things going on, and that wasn't... To give it the intro to the episode, that should have been, like, the major arc, I felt. Whereas it really wasn't. It wasn't about Picard's experience of almost taking the crew or the Federation to war. That was like a B plot. Sorry, Andrea.
I was just going to say, like, how frustrating must it be, like, being Geordi? Like, you're in the middle of, like, this really tense, like, potential war, like, situation, and you're just, like, explaining expressions to Data like he's about four. And you must be just thinking, Data, just, like, just know where to park things. Like, this isn't the time for those questions.
Like, it feels a little bit like they treat Data like a non-native English speaker, and that I find quite frustrating. And I think... Yeah, it just, the whole thing is just a bit, particularly by season three, we're past this.
Well, Geordi's been doing this sort of thing now for 3 years, and we'd still carry on doing it for another three or four.
You'd have thought at some point he'd have just given Data a book on basic idioms so he can read it and figure it all out himself, but oh no.
Geordi LaForge wasn't really in this, was he? Because he sort of got a job up at the beginning, then the ship blew up. didn't it? And it was like, you could go do this, Geordi, go and check out their ship. And then not Jim Robinson blew it up, didn't he? Well, he set a self-destruct timer, which was quite, again, cunning, because then I did like the way it sort of made you think, oh, is he telling the truth? There's obviously some underlying, is he good, is he bad? And that were good, the way they did that, Sookie.
Well, exactly what Bob's saying. The way the actor played this part, you did not know how this story was going to finish, because you didn't know if he was actually telling the truth, he was lying. By the end of the episode, you know that he's actually being manipulated by the Romulans. But this is the way this story sort of weaved its storyline all the way through, because you just didn't know what was happening with this character. And I think that's why I really enjoyed the episode. It's because you did not know what was going to happen. And then you come to the end when it's all revealed that Commander Tomalak, right, has gone and manipulated poor Jarok, Admiral Jarok, all the way through for a number of years, by looks of it, right? So that he could get to this position, so he can force the Enterprise, or not the Enterprise, Starfleet, to enter the neutral zone and create a situation. Yeah, create a war, right? It was very good storytelling to be able to get into that sort of position.
Yeah, no, it was. It was. It kept me guessing, and I didn't expect. Yeah. I didn't expect the ending as well. I definitely didn't expect the. He killed himself, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't expect that either. Was the
orange disc?
So the orange disc was the cyanide, or whatever it was. Or yeah, whatever. No, it was. Yeah. It did keep me guessing. It held me interested. And season three, the characters are pretty. You know, pretty good by the characterizations, and the characters are pretty good by then, aren't they? They sort of know what they're doing. It was an okay. It was sort of like a decent, not like amazing, mind blowing, whatever. But it was cool. It was a good, strongish story. Kept me quite happy, I think, all the way through. John, were you going to say something?
No, Lindsay had her hand up for ages. I was really wondering what she was going to say.
Oh well,
it's going to be thrilling.
I've got the sun in my eyes. I've not closed my curtains. There's a gap in my curtains. I can't see properly. Sorry, Lindsay.
That's everybody's excuse. No, you're fine. No, I was just going to say that, like. Circling back to the idea that Geordi didn't have an awful lot to do, I think this episode is one of the classic where it's not a bad episode, and the characters aren't out of character, if we acknowledge that Crusher is badly written quite a lot of the time, and Troy also not really very well written, but they've got such a good ensemble cast that actually a good episode that has a decent guest actor and a plot that actually has some depth to it, most of the cast don't actually get that much, because there's nine characters or whatever that you've got.
There's not enough time, particularly when you're doing an on board ship character, you know, character piece. It's not action, is it? It's definitely all character, and it's about the plot of this defector. You're right, there's not a lot more. You can't really get that many people involved, can you?
We've got some interesting stuff, though, with Deanna and Riker's interrogation scene. I imagine the Romulans going, this is fucking mint, I am lush. And then, but the key thing of that is that when Data takes him to the Holo Suite, and you know, the Valley of Tula or whatever, him using that is just another method of interrogation, using kindness, and he found out that he was an admiral and all that sort of stuff just from doing that,
just from being nice, didn't he?
And I think, like, and that for me is like the Troy element of the interrogation didn't make much sense to me, because I was like, I could see her doing the let me try and befriend this person and get something out of them, but like Deanna Troy tried to be threatening, it's not very believable. But the other thing that I thought was really interesting, and again it goes back to that temperature thing, is this idea that, like, we've seen people drinking Romulan ale. I cannot believe that nobody has actually put it through a replicator. Like, it might be one of these illicit things that you have to have the right contact. You might need to know a Suki to, like, get your hands on it. Like, you, it's not in the main computer database.
The previous long-running thing where that you can't replicate Romulan ale, and for some reason that's just allowed to continue. Basic fucking chemistry means you can. But, I mean, you know.
Wonder what the I mean, I know it's fictional and all that, but I wonder what, like, the ingredients Romulan ale, which means makes a replicate.
Water and blue dye. That's is what it is, by the looks of it.
Clearly blue wicked, and somebody has, like, banned that in the past.
I mean, that's nothing wrong with that.
Blue Wicked. I think Riker and Troy had a couple of Blue Wickeds and got to get that aggressive in that interrogation scene. Bless them.
Terrible scene. Terrible.
Andrea.
I'm just standing up for the honour of Blue Wicked here. I don't have a word said against it. I think talking about in and out of character, it was nice to see that the admirals were being Starfleet admirals and washing their hands of all accountability. It's like, yeah, you decide. We're not there. You decide. That scapegoating management classic. And then say, oh, well, we're going to be too late to be of any help whatsoever. We're just like the intergalactic court holders. We'll just stand here and let you get like blasted by like whatever turns up because we're not going to make it. Sorry. And it's in that long tradition of admirals being shit, which is always comforting because it's what we know and expect.
Yeah, no, it was. I kind of like that though because it put the you kind of forget there's the bigger picture, as in the Federation and the councils and the people that are in charge. And I like it then maybe put the emphasis on the pressure on Picard and how he would deal with that. It's on him basically preventing an all out war with a very powerful adversary. It's okay. You hold your hand up, are you?
Yeah, Admiral Hayden. Well, he probably did the right thing though there as well by putting the responsibility on Picard, because they do say when that initial message came through that there was a 2.5 hour time delay on him, right? So whatever Picard was going to have to do immediately, he wasn't going to wait for a 2.5 hour message to be sent to Starfleet and then them having it returned 2.5 hours, basically a 5 hour delay. Right, it had to be all on Picard. He had to make all the decisions there.
There's lots of evidence in our actual history of like responsibility lying on some captain to do some nation level stuff because they're the people on the front line.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason why there are envelopes on nuclear submarines, isn't there? Like, you know.
Oh, the codes.
An envelope with an instruction. I believe. I don't know very little about these things. Does the Prime Minister or someone not... Or am I thinking about American submarines? I don't know. At some point, somebody had to write a letter and it goes to, like, the captain or the commander of the nuclear forces in case, like, all communication is lost.
Oh.
She's thinking of Hunt for Red October.
Yeah, I was thinking...
Ah, there we go. I knew I was listening to something.
That's a film, isn't it? It's not maybe not necessarily...
A lot of these things are based in reality. I will go do some research because I wouldn't like to be thought to be propagating incorrect myths. I was going to say a thing. So what I find really interesting, shock horror, I'm going to reference a Voyager episode, is the history of the spy episodes. Because like obviously DS9 has like Garak right the way through, who you're never entirely sure of. And I think characters where you're not sure of them, or episodes where they manage to create a character in a really short period of time where you're just not sure, are fascinating. So there's an episode of Voyager called Counterpoint, which is one of my faves.
We've reviewed Counterpoint, haven't we? I think we may have done.
Don't
you know,
think so.
If not, you've mentioned it before then, Lindsay.
Oh, probably, because it's a really good episode. But again, that's another episode of who believes who, and do you know who's believing who, and how does that pan out? And the result's not necessarily the same, but it's interesting.
No, cool. Right, I'm going to come quick fire, and I'm going to come to you first, Andrea, because you look very prepared.
I'm always prepared.
Oh, yep. Born ready, Andrea, born ready.
I've written swearing in inverted commas foreign. That's one way to get around it.
What did they say?
They had a little exchange, didn't they, where they used various...
foreign various swear words.
Other languages. I've written somewhere, and I think this must be the thing he had hidden in his boots. I've written, has the Romulan brought some disco biscuits? which turned out to be cyanide, obviously, and wasn't quite as I was hoping.
I thought it was a tracker. I thought it was like a tracker or something, you know, like hidden in his boot. But now it all makes sense.
I went straight to class A's there. So the Henry V references... it's sort of vaguely, it takes place on the kind of eve of sort of war and invasion, and it sort of culminates in Agincourt, so you can kind of see loosely where they're going with it. Henry kind of, he shits on his old drinking buddies in the plot, so there's a little bit of that kind of like betrayal and kind of letting down people you thought were on your side. What else is there? There's a vague fit as sort of Henry kind of dresses up as like a commoner and walks amongst people, and obviously the Romulan guy pretends to be quite a lowly officer. Yes. to bring him. It's kind of tenuous, to be honest. It's not the best sort of set of references. I thought that that butcher hero trope is very well trodden, I think, in Star Trek. It's quite a favourite. What else? And the good dad trope as well. It's like, I might be like a bad warlord, but I'm a good dad. That's I do quite often. I've put that the instruction to set it to maximum scan. Yeah, that sounds like a legit command. Like, yeah, like what setting should we put? It's like turn it up to 11, isn't it? which is sort of got blended into the techno babble a little bit. I thought the Romulan guy got homesick very quickly, considering he like scoots about in space and is probably weeks from home quite a lot. He'd only been gone like 12 hours or something. He's like, oh, I'm so homesick. That seemed to like come on quite quickly. I thought that the kind of main Romulan character, I thought he was really well played. The guy at the end with the Camp Romulan commander had these like Larry Grayson vibes. I've written, he had he's got a dab on. He must be telling lies. But yeah, I thought he was extra camp. I've got a new drinking game, which is every time Worf says, "Aye, sir," it was quite high in this episode.
You're pissed then by the end of it, Andrew.
Pretty much, yeah. But if anyone wants a drinking game, because obviously Worf doesn't say a great deal, particularly in early TNG, and every time Worf says, "Aye, sir," just have a swig, and there's a merry night for all. And I've just put the end, I really kind of felt quite a lot of sympathy for the guy at the end. It was quite sad that he'd like, sort of offed himself. And I've just written "poor sod," which is the last line of my notes.
Lovely, thank you, Andrea. It's okay.
I'm just looking at is it Memory Alpha, and they've got a little quote on there saying this, that Henry V segment at the beginning was not supposed to be, and it was a last minute replacement because they originally wanted Data as Sherlock Holmes. Oh. And now if you know Data, he's played Sherlock Holmes a number of times later on in the series, and this was supposed to be the first showing for it. I haven't got much else apart from I do really like the main guest actor, which is James Sloan. The way he played it from initially coming on, you just didn't know how, the way he was working, and to find out that he was ultimately betrayed by his own people, even though he was trying to betray his own people, right, is a bit of a sorry fate. And when he kills himself, that is a sad ending for him. Other than that, I haven't got much notes. Sorry, guys.
Lindsay, let's get that tank of yours emptied.
Well, I have to say, I'm working note three today, so my tank is pretty close to empty, or it hasn't really stopped me saying quite a lot anyway.
Amazing.
I think it is interesting. Like, I think I don't object to the Henry V thing, and I think it makes more sense than a Holmes intro would. Like, there would have been no real logic there, I don't think. But it's how they choose to use Patrick Stewart in it makes very little sense to me. Like, it would have made more sense of, like, you know, either give him an interest in Shakespeare and have him acting opposite Data, and then them coming out of character and having that conversation, or certainly don't have two versions of him in the same room, because that it defies any form of logic at all. Unless it's creepy, like Seven of Nine having a hollow Chakotay to play with on the holiday, which is not really an analogy anybody wants, because like, if Data has created a like Patrick Stewart / Captain Picard that he's like then turned into this character for Henry V, that's weird.
I think the whole scene though was meant to be a bit of a thing for Patrick Stewart, that's all. And I think they thought that you couldn't tell it was him because the prosthetic on him was so good. Obviously he could.
Well, maybe that was the intention, or maybe the intention was that we wouldn't be able to spot it was him, but yeah. Still. I think for me this is a classic. It's a classic episode. It's not amazing, but it's pretty good. Like, you'd watch it, you'd enjoy it.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely fine. I mean, I've not got a great deal to add. I think we've covered it all. Although it's quite good, it's quite gripping. There's some nice twists and turns in there. It is pretty just standard Star Trek Next Generation fare, and there's nowt wrong with that. John.
No, I've not got anything, mate. No, I'm joking. I've written very little, but fuck the treaty is one line, and all of this shit for a Shakespeare quote at the end. I think they did the trope thing at the very start of just that we've seen something on the scanners, and there's your plot A launched. It was pretty basic. But on what Lindsay mentioned, or what maybe I mentioned with the Hunt for Red October, where that is essentially a Russian guy trying to defect to America and taking his knowledge and weapons with him, and his own side trying to get him back, and his own side knowing what he was doing and stuff. But he still got away with it at the end. It was a different ending, but there are parallels there. So he was kind of the Sean Connery character as the Romulan. So
he was.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. What else do I say in here? It's always a game of fucking chess, I've written. I don't know why.
There we go.
Emergency beam out. Yeah, there's always one of them as well. Always beam them out just before a ship explodes. Always good.
That's the tension.
So that's it from me. Yeah.
Thanks, Johnny. That's to the tension, doesn't it? But yeah.
Just before we go any further, yes. I would just like to say the letters that I'm referring to are letters of last resort.
There you go.
So there are four identically worded handwritten letters from the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom to the commanding officers of the four British ballistic missile submarines.
God, imagine what fucking Boris
Johnson. They contain orders on what action to take in the event of an enemy nuclear strike that has destroyed the British government. See, I knew I wasn't talking total rubbish.
You read that on the internet, so it's got to be true. Do get them, don't get them, do have a fucking Berlin. That's probably what it says in Boris Johnson's language. Lovely. Let's put some lights on this.
How many lights you see?
There are four lights!
I asked how many lights you see.
Lights out of five. John, how many lights do you see?
I see it's a good episode, but not the greatest episode. It's run-of-the-mill in a lot of ways, so I'm going to go three lights.
Fair lights, then. Andrea, how many lights do you see?
My summary review and lights are very similar to John's. I'm a 3 out of 5 as well. I think it's fine. It's watchable. It's enjoyable. It's not the greatest episode. It's not the worst episode. It's just kind of solid. It does a job.
It's a solid. We like everyone likes a solid. Sucky.
I'm going to give one higher than the others because I do. It is a solid episode. It's a good episode, but I do like the performance of the lead actor, so I'm going to give that an extra mark. So 4 out of 5.
Four, fucking hell. Lindsay?
I'm going to go for 3.5. I'm going to split the difference. Yeah, no, I think it's a good episode, but it's quite enjoyable.
It's all right, isn't it? That's why I'm going to give it a 3 lights out of 5. It was all right. It was good Star Trek, that. Wicked, enough of what we think. Let's find out what you think in listeners' feedback. Well, you've heard what we think to the Next Generation episode, The Defector. Let's find out what you think. John, would you kick us off, please?
Sure. Jack McMorrow says, The Defector. First, I'm sure I speak for many where I say, I'm glad to see you back in my podcast app, doodad. Well, unlucky, Jack. I love the Shakespeare episode, opening of the episode. I would genuinely watch great actors playing Star Trek playing Shakespeare. I'd pitch this as a new spin-off, but Alex Kurtzman has just been sacked for the 10th time today. So during lockdowns 1 to 3, I watched all Trek from the Cage to no small parts of Lower Decks. I don't remember watching this well before this afternoon. Good episode. I genuinely didn't see the ending coming, although I did kick myself for not predicting it. It has something of a hidden gem, not as great as episodes such as Best of Both Worlds or The Drumhead, but very enjoyable. The acting is top tier from all fronts. The writing is great, and I personally love how Henry V is actually so woven into the episode rather than a good addition simply bolted onto pad out runtime. Although I wonder how they got away with not at least giving Shakespeare at least a special thanks credit. All in all, an above-average episode which has intrigue aplenty, and I think the undelivered letter to the Romulan family at the end should show up in Picard. Arguably, it should have last season.
Mm.
4 out of 5 to visit my friends in Sheffield and Hull after over 17 months.
Oh, bless.
Yes, Jack.
Oh, up north, eh? Lovely. Thanks very much, Jack. Andrea?
So we've got Dave from Doctor Who Show on Twitter. There's at David_kitchen_. I like all the ideas here and many of the moments, but it's not really an episode which sits strong in the memory and doesn't really fill out the 42 minutes that well. Love the Henry V scene and great to see Andreas Katsulas back. Overall, it's fine.
Cool. I think Dave's going down our sort of road there. And finally, Lindsay.
So I have a comment from Doctor Who's Line Is It Anyway, also from Twitter. Very solid episode which showed the duplicity of the Romans were really duplicitous too. The duplicity of the Romulans, yet also that, like most species, that they are not all the same and that these different shades add to the tapestry of any of these alien races. Stoying?
What?
I'm assuming interesting. Well, it's a capital STOINGGGG. So, Star Trek.
STOING.
STOING.
Yeah.
Okay. Apologies. I have no idea what that was supposed to sound like. It was really hitting its stride by now. 8 out of 10.
Lovely. Thanks very much indeed. Anyway, it's time to vote for this Times Red Shirt. Redshirt time. Who do we think has been the worst host? Let's vote accordingly, and then we'll work out how to send them to their death. Sucky, you go first for the red shirt, my friend.
Okay. Well, I was going to vote for John because he was late, but then I thought, no, it wasn't his fault. He probably just didn't read the message. So I'm going to vote for Bob for leaving us.
All right, fair enough.
Right. So, you know, I'm going to miss you, mate. You.
You'll see me a
lot. We literally talk to him every fucking week.
Oh, anyway, shut up. So. This is just for the podcast purposes. Just don't spoil the illusion, man.
All right, I'll take your red shirt, Sucky. Andrea, who are you voting for?
Well, I was almost not going to give you the satisfaction, Bob, because you've even worn a red shirt. Is it some sort of like campaign to like of your last late episode to be the red shirt? Yes. But I think since your last, I am going to allow you the privilege of being a red shirt.
Oh, thanks, Andrew. You know I love dying. John.
Who? I mean, yeah.
Brilliant.
I'm going to pick Sucky.
Sucky.
I don't want to pick you, Bob, because I don't want you getting a red shirt because you don't fucking deserve it.
I don't deserve death.
But Sucky and his always reading on Memory Alpha when he's got.
Yeah. Not always. First time. I've never seen this before. So
does it all the time in Proctor Who?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to go.
Yeah, I need to go onto a Star Trek website to talk about Doctor Who.
I'm on
Proctor Who.
Memory Alpha does. Oh yeah, it's Memory Alpha, isn't it? Star Trek. You're right, yeah. Sucky. Fountain of Knowledge. He gets it all off the internet. Put your tongue away. It's delicious. Lindsay.
Yeah, well, you've had it down the back of your throat.
Happened to Sucky the last 16 months? Like, he used to be upstanding.
Yeah, he used to be
he
nice.
Was Grandpa. We used to say, Grandpa, we love you.
And also, Sucky's got his knee in slightly in view. And it looks like he's got a massive cock that he's just put his hand on occasionally.
There you go, one for the listeners. Lindsay.
I just can't deal. Bob, you're fired.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
so this is that.
Alan Sugar.
I am going to vote for Sucky as well, so I've got three. Sucky, you've just been silly tonight. In fact, you've been a bit laddie. I'm not sure if
it's almost like the fact that he's going comment, to be in charge.
One comment I said, and that's
I'm feeling a bit like you're taking the power away, Sucky.
I'm trying to channel Bob for the next episode.
Well, you're doing a very grand job, sir. So I win by 3-2.
I don't think I can manage more levels of Bobness.
Thanks. Thanks. So I am
you
the red
shirt.
You can
barely manage your level of suckiness, Sucky.
Oh, bless you. Andrea, how for the final time, I am actually going to die. How am I going to die, please, Andrea?
I think we're going to batter you to death with microphones until you are finally like silenced for all eternity.
You're going to actually take me off the broadcasting waves. Well, someone
can always just transport them into space inside out. That's always a good one.
That's it, isn't it? See my innards. Beautiful. Well, thank you very much for killing me for the final
that
time.
Romulan wanted.
Yeah.
Give him loads of laxatives and so he can be pooping.
I love laxative. I always have prunes in my cereal and I'm very, very steady. With my movements on a morning. Prunes, 15 minutes later, evacuated.
Prunes, good.
Yeah, like a
prunes
like
and
a,
dites.
Yeah, like a Russian submarine crew under attack. Anyway, so
we missed a trick here, considering like we could have just force fed you those Romulan disco biscuits and done it quietly.
Sat there on floor dribbling with shit myself. Wicked. Well, thank you very much for the final time. It has been a pleasure, all of you, you guys and listeners, talking about Star Trek for the last 15 months or well, no, it's longer than that, 16-17 months. So it's the last time I'm going to say goodbye.
You'll be back.
It's not
Bob.
The kind of thing I've not got form
nothing,
for that
nothing
job.
Is forever.
I've not got form for coming back onto podcasts a good few
That's
times
true,
after
yeah,
I left.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, generally, thank you very much, guys. It has been awesome. And these guys will be back at some point in the near future with some more Star Trek related poddery. But until then, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bob. Miss you.
Bye, Bob.